Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun, Season 2!
We made it all the way to a second season.
We finally made it to the second season of our Sopranos podcast. This is a podcast where we go through every single episode of The Sopranos and analyze it. Analyze this. We should have called this podcast Analyze This.
I feel like that would have been confusing for people, but I see where you're going with that.
Yeah, but no one's going to start an Analyze This podcast. That would be ridiculous.
Well, that could be our next venture.
Our next venture is just to have just analyze the same movie over and over again. We'll call it Analyze This.
Yeah.
We go through every single episode, we talk about it, we say what we liked about it, what we disliked about it, and usually, you know, we'll have a guest on. Major guests of last season have included LP from Run the Jewels, Felix Biederman from Chapo Trap House, Adam Todd Brown from Unpopular Opinion Podcast. Who's a big deal?
Julia Prescott.
Yeah. We had Alan Sepinwall.
But you know what? This is the first episode of season two. We're taking it back to basics. It's just going to be the two of us.
Back to basics. Exactly. This is what it's all about. It's just podcasting with homies. Just talking about your favorite show.
That's right.
And before we get started, I think it is time to play, for the first time in season two of this podcast, our theme song.
Here you go.
You woke up this morning. Pod. Yourself again. Your mama always said you'd be the chosen. Pod. Pod. You got to burn the shine. Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. Yeah. Still funny after all these years. I mean, it hasn't been a year, so I can't say years. This week we are getting into season two, episode one of The Sopranos. It is titled Guy Walks Into a Psychiatrist's Office. Now, the synopsis that we have is season two opens with the aftermath of the federal crackdown. Junior's in jail. Melfi refuses to see Tony. Christopher's expanding into new business ventures. Pussy is still missing. And Tony's adjusting to life as the new boss. To complicate matters even more, Tony's free-spirited sister Janice arrives to take care of Livia.
That's right. And this episode aired January 16th, 2000, which is actually
not the 90s.
No, it's not the 90s anymore. It's 9 months after the last season ended. Which I think is probably the shortest. I haven't, you know, checked this, but I'm pretty sure that's the shortest season break in Sopranos. Like the last two, I feel like they went on like a 2 year hiatus between seasons, and then
I mean, is that the shortest season break of any prestige TV show ever?
Right,
that's insane.
Yeah, I mean,
like nowadays, you know, you expect your prestige TV show after, you know, the season is over, you go, all right, so. Let's see. The next one is, 2 years from now. Cool. Right. Cool.
Yeah.
And if it's basic cable, you might get a year, but you definitely don't get 9 months. That is, that's a feat.
Right.
I'll tell you what.
Yeah, the cast has got to go make some bad rom-coms, and then they quickly realize that they aren't getting any roles as good as whatever they had on the HBO show mm-hmm. that they're starring in.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and, you know, a lot of the times they'll recast, you know, people will drop out because they'll be like, ah, I don't need Game of Thrones anymore. I'm going to be the new fucking Jason Statham. And
yeah.
That doesn't work out for them.
Yeah, I miss old Dario. I loved old Dario.
Old Dario was too hot.
No.
I'm watching this, you know, Game of Thrones with Francesca. It's her first time going through it. We're at season 5, and of course she noticed that Dario was now some bearded dude.
Yeah, he's like the sensitive indie band Dario. I like the old Cro-Mag, like, probably listen to Pantera Dario.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, if you look at all the tattoos on his body, one of them might be a swastika. Aryan Dario was definitely, I mean, he was hot, but he was like, Francesca described him as too hot for TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was...
Well, but the queen's got to want to have sex with him. That's the whole point. And by the way, we talk about how George R. R. Martin, you know, is like the godfather of Game of Thrones and how it all went to after he left. But what we don't talk about enough is how many really good creative decisions that the TV show made. And one of them was not having Dario with like a purple, like with a three-cornered goatee that's all different colors.
Oh, yeah. Or also not having Tyrion get his nose cut off, clean off.
Yeah.
I mean, there are things like that where you're like, yeah, it was a good decision just to give him a little scar.
Because otherwise that'd be a lot of makeup every day for that guy.
It's too much makeup, a lot of CG going on. It's just not worth it. So, you know, they did make some good decisions.
Sure.
And you got to give credit where credit is due. D.B. Weiss and the other guy, you guys did great.
Yeah, C.B. Weiss.
Is it CB?
No, I don't know.
it's Hebe Weiss and GB Weiss. Yeah.
But we're here to talk about The Sopranos.
Yes, the other best TV show ever made.
That's right. And we're going to take the Wayback Machine. Way back.
Yeah.
19 years ago, almost 20, to January 16th, 2000. Mm-hmm. Do you know what the top song was?
I don't. Tell me.
It was What a Girl Wants by Christina Aguilera.
Wow, what a girl wants, what a girl needs is for her prestige TV show to come back in 9 months.
Yeah, which just beat out the previous week's number one, which was Smooth by Rob Thomas and Carlos Santana. Which is weird, like, What a Girl Wants feels like very much a slice of the early 2000s, and Smooth feels like it just came out like last week or something.
I don't know. You're freaking crazy, dude, because like Smooth is one of the most, like, it's the most millennium song that I think exists outside of the song Millennium by Robbie Williams.
I guess it's just that it had like that second meme life.
It did have a second life on memes, but it is like, to me, it is a very dated feeling song. And it's also just one of those hit songs that you listen to it and you can't deny that it's a hit, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just like, it's just pleasant.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like,
I mean,
it's like a slightly less obnoxious Maroon 5 song almost. And by the way,
yes,
Carlos Santana has the best job in music, because
solos over other people's songs.
Yeah, someone else writes a song, he comes in, he plays the same solo that he always plays. He's like, what key is it in? All right, and then he just plays the same thing that he plays over every song, and he's like, he's famous for that.
Yeah, he's a master of a blues scale, and he can also do that Spanish-sounding scale. So learn two scales, ladies and gentlemen.
Good for him. That's why he has his own table at Mama's in North Beach in San Francisco. So
you know what? He deserves it. Carlos Santana is a goddamn national treasure, Vince. All
he
right?
should be able to eat brunch line-free in San Francisco whenever he wants because of those shitty solos.
God damn right. First of all, they're not shitty. They're solidly mediocre, but they sound really, really good on a PRS, dude. You get that Paul Reed Smith guitar and woo, those fucking pickups. Delicious. Yeah.
The top movie was Next Friday.
Wow, that went to number one, huh?
Yeah, well, it was the first week it was out. It didn't make a ton of money, but you know, it was there. Headlines.
Good for Ice Cube.
Yeah, good for him. Headline, I think there was a scene in Straight Outta Compton where Ice Cube is writing the script for Next Friday.
I thought he was writing just Friday.
Yeah, but I think in the sequel to Straight Outta Compton, we'll get a scene of Ice Cube. writing the script. I love how that's the most self-aggrandizing biopic I think I've ever seen. But, you know, I like Ice Cube, so good for him.
I mean, it was produced by him, and, you know, you gotta credit where credit is due. The guy sure did pivot into a whole other career.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about Ice Cube is there's this wonderful clip where he is, it's like a live clip that someone taped on their phone. And at the end of a song, he's going, "Keep it gangsta, y'all. Keep it gangsta. Keep it gangsta, y'all. Keep it gangsta. I want to thank you all. I want to thank you." it's the most gangster thing you can do is be polite. You know?
Right. Yeah.
It was, you love him.
Look, I'm glad he cashed in. Some other headlines quickly. Al Gore called out George Bush. You know, they were running for president against each other. For supporting,
I remember that,
the Confederate flag flying over the State House in South Carolina. David Letterman was recovering from heart bypass surgery.
Damn.
Which is pretty amazing that he had heart bypass surgery a full 20 years ago and he's still kicking ass.
Yeah.
And Israel puts West Bank withdrawal on hold. I think I think that's still on hold.
Yeah, I think that hold is still going strong.
Yeah.
So, but that's a whole other podcast. We don't have to discuss Israeli politics here.
Well, you know, the more things change, the more things stay the same.
You know, and I think that is a good segue into what this episode is about.
Yeah.
Because this episode starts out with the song "A Very Good Year," a song by Frank Sinatra, mm-hmm. in which you see kind of a montage of where we're at now with all of the characters.
Yeah, they didn't need to tell. They didn't need to do a catching up. They didn't do like a previously on. So, but they just had like a montage showing what everybody's doing now.
And it's nice because the montage is, it's an interesting thing because it's like what they're doing is pretty much exactly what they were doing. But it was a very good year is kind of, I felt, and I don't know if I'm wrong, maybe, you know, you tell me if I'm going a little off the reservation here. But like, I thought it was their way of being like, they did have, you know, he had a good year in terms of like, he is now the, you know, street boss, you know, junior's locked up. His mom is in like some sort of hospital. And yet, you know, with all that going on, he's still sad. Tony's still sad about life. And so, you know, Chris Moltisanti is like on drugs now, like more so than he was before.
Right, right.
You know, Carmela and Tony's marriage is falling apart. I guess Meadow's driving, so she's you know, things are looking up for her. You know what that montage missed was, because it had things like, you know, Polly Walnuts fucking a stripper on like, I think, a pool table. But it didn't have AJ just masturbating in his bed.
Yeah.
And I felt like, you know, at that age, yeah, that's what he'd be doing.
Yeah. Listening to like Slipknot or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No!
That's Korn, but whatever.
God damn it.
Yeah.
Don't you fucking touch me! That's Slipknot.
So, Bada B stories.
Yeah, let's get into all the Bada B stories, dude. So, we've got Tony taking over Junior's crew, Janice as Monkey Wrench.
Yeah, she's the catfish before that movie, Catfish. She's exactly. The weird one that makes stuff interesting.
She's the wild card.
Yeah.
You got Chris's Boiler Room, not unlike the movie Boiler Room. Tony trying to make nice with Melfi, and the house, the horse. That's Christopher doing heroin.
That's Janice being mad that Tony's trying to sell Livia's house. General thoughts on this episode.
It is The Sopranos, and I think this is true of all of season two. You know, you see hints of what The Sopranos is going to become in season one, and it kind of finds its voice really quickly. But in terms of really establishing what The Sopranos does and what it's about, this episode, I think, is the most Sopranos that they've been so far. And I mean that in terms of, like, you've got the scene where Big Pussy comes out of hiding, and he invites him in. And they're having this conversation in their kitchen about how, you know, he basically ran away and, you know, he was worried about getting whacked for being the rat. And in the background, you can just hear, what's her name?
Carmella.
Carmella, you know, yelling at her children to get up. And then you hear AJ going, "I think I'm sick," which is,
yeah,
it's like the mix of family drama and mafia family drama, mm-hmm, just like contrasting is just so Sopranos. And like the therapy in this episode is brilliant. It's like, to me, this is, it's not up there as one of my favorite episodes, but it's really like, okay, The Sopranos is off and running. It right. has its voice. It knows what it does.
Was this the most wife nagging heavy episode that we've seen so far? Because, I mean, it opens with, with Tony and Big Pussy, and Carmella's upstairs. She's kind of yelling at the kids and nagging. And then, you know, we get, what's his name, who got whacked?
Jimmy.
Philly.
Philly. Yeah.
So Philly gets whacked. Philly gets whacked at the beginning because he's been spreading rumors. He's been spreading facts about Tony trying to kill his mother. And the first scene with him is like, he gets in the car and his wife yells, if he can go to the bakery, I think. And he just, he lets out a long sigh and then he drives.
And not only that, then there's also, of course, when Big Pussy and Tony go to the basement to talk about, the fact that, you know, he went off the reservation. You hear Carmella yelling, "Can you bring up some waters?" And like, yeah, just like yelling at Tony and Pussy to do chores. And not only that, you also have Pussy explaining why he never told his wife, because he fucking hates his wife. And
yeah, he calls her a twat.
Yeah, he calls her a twat. And then at one point in the party scene, in order to break the tension, which is it's one of my favorite moments in this episode, Tony is just pissed off about something that Janice has done, you know, taking away the for sale sign on the house. And he's just like in kind of pecking order mode, where anyone says anything to him, he's just going to yell at them because he's the boss. It's this mode he gets in when he's emasculated. He's like, okay, I have to take this out on someone. So he just randomly goes up to Big Pussy and he goes, "You fucking moron." And then Big Pussy looks over and goes, "Oh, hey, is that my wife over there? Oh no, it's just a Saint Bernard in the yard." And and everyone laughs, and Tony, it breaks the ice, the tension, and he goes, "You fucking moron." And that, like, was this kind of sweet.
It was
way.
A strange moment. I have a clip of that. I had to rewind that twice, I guess, just because the cadence was off, and I couldn't tell
why he shit on his wife.
Where he pulled that one from, where he's like, "Hey, people are messing with me. I gotta lighten the mood here by calling my wife a dog." So I do have a clip of that.
Yeah.
What the fuck you doing?
Second seat and coming up.
Fucking moron.
Oh, look at my wife over there. No, wait, Tone. The neighbor Saint Bernard is on your property.
You're a fucking moron.
Anyway, we flew first class.
I guess maybe it was because he like didn't wait long enough for the punchline. Also, I didn't quite get the second seating coming up, and then Tony's like calls him a moron.
Yeah, I didn't get second seating either. If you do understand that, please email us, Patreon, frockcast@gmail.com.
I mean, I get what he's saying. He's saying, like, he's cooking seconds, but it was just, like the, I don't know.
I'm not sure what makes him a fucking moron for saying that.
Right. Like the syntax of that was odd, like in that context.
Yeah, but what I love about that moment is that it shows, number one, just kind of like how angry Tony is and how he needs to, when he's feeling emasculated, especially, or feels out of control, he needs to take it out on, you know, the people, his subordinates, right? All the people below him. And it also shows that Big Pussy has this kind of masterful way of like shifting the conversation back into like he's good at playing Tony. He's good at like taking Tony and being like, all right, I understand that Tony's mad at me for no fucking reason, so I'm going to shit on my wife. And nagging wife as scapegoat is definitely a theme of this of this episode.
And we also, you know, on that subject, we can't forget Carmela's parents. This is the first. This is also the first appearance of Carmela's parents is in this episode, and we first see her father, who's drinking a scotch and has like a whiskey or something, and he's got a cigarette in between his fingers as he's holding his whiskey glass. And the first scene is just her mom giving him like a dirty look for smoking and drinking, and then just proceeds to like henpeck him for the next 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah.
I do have a clip of that as well.
Do it.
You go to the market, pick up a couple cans of pears. Canned pears, not fresh. That's the secret to my pound cake. And get some bussin' and go while you're there.
Pears. You want the dough?
I'm not even going to answer this time.
There is a new market, Dad, down on Pompton.
I'm not even going to answer this time.
Yeah, she's a marvelous character, and so is Hugh. The DeAngelis's are some of my favorite Sopranos, like periphery characters that they don't show up nearly enough. There's more of them as the series goes on, but like just the relationship between the mother and father there is just so funny, because Hugh is, he's this very like, he's, it's not an old fashioned, like, you know, relationship in a way. I mean, it's like, it's very clear who wears the pants. And in fact, wearing the pants is another theme in this that kind of ties into the nagging wife thing, because at one point Janice goes outside to sneak a cigarette or to smoke a cigarette, and then Tony goes out to meet him and to meet her, and then sneaks a hit off of it, and then she's like, "Oh, I guess we know who wears the pants." And so it's like, there is this like theme of like male emasculation by their significant others.
Oh, just being I mean, it feels almost a little sexist in the writing, because everyone's being like henpecked by their wife in this episode, or mother.
It's a wife, mother, or therapist. I mean, it's just like any woman in this really, like, you know, is definitely written in a way that is, I would say low-key sexist. And I think nothing distills it more than the scene with Chrissy and his girlfriend, what is it? What's
Adriana.
Her name? Adriana, yeah. It's been a year since we've done this podcast. And by a year, I mean 3 weeks. In which they just have an all-out hitting fight in front of Matthew Bevilacqua and what's his name? Sean something.
Yeah, the guy who played the guy who was in A Bronx Tale.
Yeah. Matthew Bevilacqua is the guy who's in A Bronx Tale, and the other one is Sean Gismati, who it's Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Yeah. The other guy, I thought that was Casper Van Dien. He's just a guy who really looks like an Italian version of Casper Van Dien.
You're talking about the Sean Gismati character?
Yeah, the guy who looks he looks like the guy from Starship Troopers. He's got that same like, same kind of like your face is almost too chiseled to put in a show about real people.
Right. Completely. Yeah. And I think we should get into what the entire Matthew Bevilacqua and Sean Gismati storyline is.
Yeah, that's like in terms of mob plots, mob like rackets. I really enjoyed this one. I guess it's just because I enjoy the idea of like pump and dump schemes and just the idea that they got these, you know, people work. I mean, I guess the idea is that Christopher, who has hired an Asian guy to take his Series 7 exam, and that's the opening shot.
Which is like so unnecessarily racist. Like,
but I feel like that's exactly how Christopher would do it. It's like, oh, of course he's gonna pass. This is Asian.
Yeah, yeah. There's that thing with The Sopranos where some of it is like, is this racist because the character's racist, or is this just a racist choice they made?
Right.
Because I can't imagine that there are a lot of mobbed up Asian dudes, you know, in kind of the area.
I don't think the guy has to be mobbed up. It's just a guy that Christopher offered a bunch of money to take his exam for, I think.
Okay, yeah, maybe so. A part of me was like, yeah, but you could have got someone, I don't know. It seemed to me like, you know, in order to make sure that they know it's not Chris Moltisanti, we'll make it an Asian guy because they're smart. Yeah. And I was just like, oh, boy, that is, yeah.
So the idea is that he's the SEC, the SEC compliance officer, is that what he is? And so he's basically... Yeah. Running this boiler room, like not necessarily in title, but in practice. And so he's having all these guys push their favored stocks.
Webistics.
Yeah, Webistics.
We're pushing Webistics over here.
Which is a great like Silicon Valley. It's definitely from the first tech bubble era.
Yes, the 2000s.
Yeah, Webistics. Like, what does it do? I don't know. It's on the web. Let's pump it up. And I have a clip of they catch a guy who's not pushing their preferred stock. And he just goes and just dumps coffee on his back, which is great.
Yeah, it's right after Chris leaves for the day because he's bored just sitting in an office. Which, by the way, I love that for Chris, like, what is kind of like boring ass work to him is just like what he imagines a desk job is you just sit in an office all day.
Yeah.
And it's just so funny because it's like, no, like people like work and stuff in their offices.
Yeah.
But that's the whole thing. Like the whole dream of being in the mafia is like, you're allowed to sit somewhere and just collect a paycheck.
Yeah. And couldn't he have like worked on a script in there or maybe got into gaming? I could see Christopher like getting into gaming and being in his office.
Dude,
just doing
if Chris were around in 2019, he would for sure have not only a podcast, but he would have like a Twitch stream. He would try to be an influencer for sure.
He would definitely have spent a lot of money on a gaming chair.
Yes, yes, he'd be a gaming chair guy for sure.
Okay, so here's a little bit of the boiler room assault, as I like to call it.
It's very sound company.
Making a note of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you're going to want to make that check out.
Date
of purchase would be the day.
Whether you want to go for growth or value. Yeah, you know, we've got hundreds of mutual funds that you can do.
Supposed to push Webistics.
I was just giving them alternatives. Shit.
Webistics is our pick of the week.
Why? It's got a 3 million float. The competition's robust, and their technology's 2 years behind. Your stock's a dog.
We said,
stop!
Hey, stop that!
Hey, I'm still the manager here. This is unacceptable. Where's Moltisanti? I'm gonna make a call. You think I don't know who really runs this operation, huh?
Get back in your fucking office.
I like that because this poor guy's obviously just confused about like why,
right.
Like instead of just telling them why they're pushing Webistics, he'd probably, you know, if they actually like brought him in on the scheme, he'd probably be like, oh, okay. That makes sense. I see why you guys are doing that. But instead, they just throw coffee in his face and beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's they stand out like sore thumbs in this kind of, like, you know, white collar job where they're like, listen, all we really know is like kicking people's asses. And what's weird is like it does seem like Matthew Bevilacqua actually does have some background in this. He has like a not in like, yeah, obviously in beating people's asses, but also in like stock fraud. Like he was talking to Chris later in the episode where he was basically trying to explain, you know, like kind
the
of
scheme.
Explain to him the scheme, because like, yeah. Chris has no fucking idea what's going on because he's a fucking moron and he's a junkie. Not that junkies can't be smart. Some of us, you know, it just takes a while.
Not all junkies.
Hashtag not all junkies. But yeah, like he seems to be like a semi-smart guy, but they're to me a distillation of what like literally everyone else is in this show, in terms of like all of the mobsters are really just playing mafia,
right?
And they're the things that they're doing, you know, the tough guy thing is like, it's just what they're doing, what they think you would do if you were in a movie, but
right.
it stands out. You know, when there's no fucking Rolling Stones Gimme Shelter playing in the background when you're beating some stockbroker's ass,
yeah.
it looks like a bit of an overreaction.
Right.
So when they're just mobbing on that dude, it is so funny because yeah. you're like, this is so over the top.
And another thing that I really like about that setting is that, you know, they're all playing mafia, and all these like finance Wall Street type guys, they're all just playing Wall Street too. So it's like,
yeah, that's
everyone's
true.
Sort of play acting. And then the other thing that I like about it is that, you know, to do the thing where you're pushing stocks, you're basically just kind of like a glorified mafia guy as it is. And so like
true.
The juxtaposition of like these, you know, these Wall Street guys who probably talk like they're all tough guys in their off hours. And, you know, you stick like a real mob guy in there and it's just this nice mix of things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's pretty wonderful. And just like introducing us, it's the best way to introduce us to these two fucking clowns, because they will pop in and out of season two in a way that is just so funny. Like, they are the two biggest jerk-offs in, you know, in the show. And it's the best way to introduce them. It's just,
right.
You know, fucking clowns.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And a little bit of background here. This is my favorite piece of trivia, probably from this episode.
Do it.
Is that Matt Bevilacqua, who is played by Lilo Brancato Jr., who is in
yeah.
A Bronx Tale. He just has that face that looks like a young mafia guy, and I think
he does. He looks a lot like Robert De Niro.
He's got an authentic Guido face, I guess.
Yeah.
And so. So he was actually in jail between 2005 and 2013. He was drug addict. And in December 2005, Brancato was charged with second-degree murder for his role in a burglary in the Bronx, New York, in which an off-duty police officer confronted two burglars and was killed in a shootout. Brancato was subsequently acquitted of murder, but was convicted of first-degree attempted burglary and sentenced to 10 years in prison.
God damn. So he got out in, what, 8?
Yes.
Ah, well, good for him. I hope he's turned his life around, because that's, you know, second-degree murder is, that's a pretty big bottom for a drug addict. You know,
yeah,
mine was when someone called my parents. So, yeah.
Well, you dodged
a bullet
there. Literally.
I did. Yeah. Unfortunately for that off-duty cop, not so lucky. Oh, that's not nice. Maybe I'll cut that out. Doesn't matter.
there's like a lot of material for a listicle on you know, actors playing criminals in HBO prestige series that actually turned out to be criminals later.
Yeah, I think I remember when Snoop from The Wire was arrested for something. Right. And I was like, oh, yeah, that that character did seem very real.
Yeah, she
you know?
Seemed a little too authentic.
Yeah, like very authentic, very authentic. Hope Snoop is doing well, too, because she is by far one of the greatest characters on that show.
Oh,
and that is one of the greatest
in cable history.
Made.
And I kind of wish I watched the Breaking Bad movie this past week. And
oh, I still haven't.
I always wish that they got actual tweakers to play Jesse Pinkman's friends, because boy,
yeah,
they really felt like Law and Order episode tweakers, and they would if they had like a some sort of Snoop or Matt Bevilacqua in those roles. Boy,
so
that
wait,
been a lot better.
Did you did watch the movie or you didn't?
Yes, I did.
Oh, okay, and no good, huh?
I mean, it was all right. I was trying not to fall asleep the whole time. It's like we don't need to know what happened to Jesse Pinkman after Breaking Bad. Like, we could have guessed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what's kept me from watching it is, like, I you know, it was such a perfect ending to that show. And why sully it with some, you know, dumb movie?
Right. So, but speaking
of which, I'm very, very excited about seeing Newark starring James Gandolfini's son.
Yes.
But that's a prequel, so it won't ruin it. All right? So shut up.
Yeah, well, you know, if Better Call Saul is arguably, well, not arguably, I think it's better than Breaking Bad. So, you know,
damn.
there's two ways to go. You can go either way on that one.
You
but
really
I wanted
can.
To go back to Big Pussy. I think there's a lot of foreshadowing because at this point in the show, we don't know that Big Pussy is a snitch. But I really feel like if you read
alert, bro, damn.
Yeah, but if you read between the lines on this episode, I really think you can guess because his explanation for why he was gone makes no sense at all.
Yeah, it really doesn't. And it does take it takes a lot of giving him the benefit of the doubt, which is hard to do if he just like went away for that long.
Yeah.
You know, it is strange to me that this was, but you know, they checked up on it. They checked up on his story and Paulie said it all checks out. So I think in the end, like, Tony did want to give him the benefit of the doubt. But
okay.
What is his explanation?
Yeah, here we go. Oh, sorry, wrong clip.
Fuck.
Nope, wrong clip again.
Idiot.
Here we go.
It was abroad, Tony. It was complicated. My back was for shit. You know that.
I don't want to fucking hear any more about your back.
That's how we met, this fucking spondylolisthesis. That's why I was popping Percocets like freaking juju beads. Anyway, so my doctor, he prescribes this clinic.
That's another good malapropism is juju beads.
Yeah, juju beads and then also spondylolisthesis.
Yeah, I don't even know what he's saying there.
I have no idea, but I know it's wrong.
Clinic for me in Puerto Rico. I didn't exactly object, Tony. Give him the fucking vibes around here. Go ahead, check.
Well, you don't tell your wife you're in the hospital?
That twat brought on most of this.
How?
Listen, down there I met this girl. 26. An acupuncturist. It was the only thing that fucking really helped with my sciatic nerve. Anyway, one thing led to another.
You can't send one feeler to me.
I'm gonna trust you, Paulie. Take the word of a degenerate cop over me?
Tony, who are you talking to down there?
Mom! Meatloaf! just the idea
love...
that he went to Puerto Rico and he met an acupuncturist on the beach? Like, what the hell kind of story is that?
Yeah, and not only that, but it's kind of genius in the way he's able to, once again, like, kind of like play Tony, you know, manipulate him in this way because he knows him, you know, probably better than anyone. They're best friends. And he's just like, listen, Tony, I know it's weird that I was gone for a long time when you guys thought I was a snitch. That being said, here's a very reasonable explanation.
Yeah.
Titties. 26-year-old titties. Puerto Rican titties. And she know how to use the acupuncture needles, if you know what I mean. And I love it. He just kind of is just, that's it. That's the whole thing. And then he's just like, why didn't you tell me? Like,
yeah. And
Tony's
I think
whole thing is like, you should have said something. I would have, if you, all you had to do was say titties, and I'd have been like, okay.
Yeah. And I think we do get a good explanation of why Tony buys this later in the episode in the St. Bernard scene. Because it's like, okay, he needs Big Pussy because he's sort of like an integral part of this crew.
And he loves him. And he, you know, he's he loves him and he wants to believe him. And, you know, for all they know, they already got the rat. They got Jimmy. So it's just kind of one of those things where, you know, he's giving him the benefit of the doubt because he really feels like, you know, he has to because he loves the guy. And that is, you know, part of like the attraction, you know, to these characters on the show is like their very human reaction to things and like, you know, them wanting to put their friendship, you know, thinking their friendship matters, thinking that it's not all just, you know, dollars and cents, that there's like some soul there. Right. And yeah, it's lovely.
All right, can we talk about Janice? Because you know, this is her first episode, and
my God, yeah,
she's a wonderful character, played by Ada Turturro, who's John Turturro's sister, of course.
Yeah, and you know, I would say for the most part, anytime there is a family of actors, I say go fuck yourselves, get a different job. You know, some of us are trying to eat out here, and our parents were librarians and shit, but. I gotta say, just, it's one of the best written characters on TV, and it is one of the most well acted characters. I feel this character so viscerally that if I ever saw Ada Turturro in real life, I would be like, oh God, I gotta get away. I gotta get away. Because I don't know about you, but I have a friend exactly like Janice.
I feel like every family has at least one Janice.
Yeah, but this person isn't in my family, but in a way it feels like they are because I've known this person for so long. And she's one of those people who just pops up in my life every once in a while and basically asks me for money.
Yeah.
And a lot of times without ever explicitly asking me for money, but there's always a con. There's always something.
An angle. They always got an angle.
They always got an angle. And it's just she's one of those people who I'm like, I've considered multiple times in my life, like, what I need to do is open a bank account and just put $5,000 in there and just wait. Because eventually, after years and years of like, basically asking me for either money or some sort of, you know, like hinting at like, I need your help for, you know, these things. And then of course I've given her all sorts of things in my life to try to like help her out. And it's always a clusterfuck because it's always, I didn't do the right thing or I didn't do it correctly. And I've always, you know, makes me feel bad for like wanting to help and then for helping in the wrong way. And I just need to have $5,000 ready because I know someday she's going to be like, Matt, I know I haven't heard from you in a long time. Give me $5,000. And I'll be like, here you go.
And it's kind of like, when a homeless person comes up and they got to give you like the big elaborate story. And I'm always like, here's $5. Leave me alone because like, I don't want to hear the story about how you ran out of gas and your mother needs a ride to the hospital. It's like, I'm giving you money so that I don't have to hear this bullshit story.
I love it when they have like they have their hand out and they like shake your hand and you're like, my instinct when someone has their hand out to shake it, I just do.
Yeah.
And then I feel their hand and I'm like, oh man, this is a rough hand for someone who doesn't look that old. And then they'll be like, so I bet you're wondering why I'm wearing these pants. So, and then you're just like, this is going to be a whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, you've practiced this story, and I don't want to watch you do this monologue yet again.
I know, because it's like a sales pitch, and it's like, and I feel bad, and, you know, I'd rather just give you the money.
Yes.
I'd rather just like...
No, I'm paying you to save me from having to hear this story.
Please, please take the money, and just you don't have to give me the pitch.
Yeah.
But yeah, Janice shows up in stunning fashion. Out of the blue. So
they call her Parvati like twice before you understand what the fuck they're talking about.
Yes, Aunt Parvati.
Yeah.
And they quickly go back to Janice. In fact, she At one point, Carmela's talking to her mother and she says the line, Parvati, so what is she, a cheese now? And they go, actually, Parvati is a Hindu god. And it's like, oh, good for her.
Yeah, so and funny. My favorite thing about Janice is not just Janice, but the way that Tony reacts to Janice, because
yes,
I mean, I don't know, I'm sure it's similar for Jews, but that's go a on. Very Italian thing where you're just like, ugh, here's my pain in the ass sister. And then you do the martyr thing where you're like, yes, of course she can stay in the house, even though like, you know, it's going to go bad. And
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's true. I imagine that's true with most families. I mean, I don't know, maybe not WASPy families or something, but like, I would say that like, that is the trouble with family is in general is that you are stuck with these people. They're your blood. And sometimes it's true with friends, like the friend that I have where right. it's like, you know, if this person that I'm talking about ever needed anything, I, for some strange reason, you feel just through time and yes. sometimes blood that you feel obligated to them.
There's like a grandfather clause with friendships. Like there's people that I don't want to yes. invite to my wedding who I'm just like, well, I've just known them so long that I got to invite them kind of thing, you know?
Yes. You've known me for long enough, Vince. You have to invite me to your wedding. Yeah. All right. I don't want to have this discussion anymore. Yeah, no, it's a thing. And just the way he reacts to her is it just kind of shows his commitment to his family and the fact that he knows, you know, even though he knows full well he's being played, you know, he's going to still give the benefit of the doubt.
But there's also an element of martyrdom there, too, where he's
definitely.
Like he's almost bending over backwards to be nice to her because he knows it's going to go bad, because then he can say that he was the good one later.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the martyrs run in the family. They run in the Sopranos family.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That just seems like a very Italian thing, because I feel like I've seen that so many times yes. in my own family. And then just the way that she's written, they give her so much backstory with like just a couple lines here and there. Where Tony asks, he's like, oh, what happened with Adolf? And she's like, oh, you mean Rolf? Rolf went back to Andorra.
And just like all you need to know is you get from looking at her and hearing her fake name Parvati.
Yeah.
It's like you know everything about her. She was a free spirit hippie chick who left the family, left Tony and her sister in the lurch to deal with Livia and all of her bullshit, and you know, is just working on all sorts of like, you know, schemes, get rich quick schemes and the like. Like the greatest thing ever is when she leaves the party early because she has to has a meeting to get funding for her video. You don't right. know yeah. what the video is. You just know that whatever it is going to be a failure. And
do you feel like, do you, and when she said video, like it wasn't music video, like she's clearly doing some sort of art installation.
Yes.
I feel like they tried deliberately to style her exactly like Joan Osborne. I feel like Joan Osborne was their inspiration for Janice, because like Janice yeah. looks exactly like Joan Osborne in the What If God Was One of Us video. Like it's the totally. Same like nose ring, same like curly hair.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's totally right, and it fits really well with the even though it's in the 2000s, the still very 90s themes of the show.
Yeah,
which I think you should play the theme song for.
Oh, jeez,
do it! Play the theme.
It's the 90s. Parents are supposed to discuss sex with their children. It's the 90s. It's the 90s. 90s.
Hell yeah. So there's a few that I'm just going to bust through real quick. Number one, there's the first time that they ever acknowledge the existence of Analyze This.
Right. I have that clip. So I feel like you don't have to, but I don't want to bust through this one quick because I feel like this is exactly like the South Park episode where they rip on Family Guy because yes. like they're so tired of being compared to Family Guy that they have to like shit on it.
Yeah.
And this is
Yeah, yeah. No, totally.
Here you go.
cues from childhood kick in. Older sister. That should be obvious enough.
Yeah, but those feelings are starting to bleed into my business.
And what sort of business are you in?
Commercial and non-processable waste.
Mr.
What does he say there? Non-participable?
Purchasable.
Oh, what? What is that?
Not purchasable. Purchase. Okay. To buy.
All right.
Waste you can't buy.
Why would you want to buy waste? It's waste.
I don't know. It sounds like a fake job.
Yeah.
Spears. I watch the news like everyone else. I know who you are. And I saw analyze this. I don't need the ramifications that could arise from treating someone like yourself.
Analyze this? Yeah. Come on, it's a fucking comedy.
I'm not taking new patients right now.
Come on. This show isn't analyze this. Fuck you. How dare you compare us?
Yeah, no, they're definitely doing that a bit. And I mean, I don't know. There's also a way they're tipping their hat to them a little bit because they're like, what are you talking about? That's a comedy. This is a serious drama. But they know very well that this is like a comedy.
And
you know,
it's a meta joke. Like they're even doing a joke while he says it.
Yeah, I fucking love it. So, yeah, there's a mention of analyze this. There is at one point they call Sean and Matthew. They call them Chippendale. And yeah. I feel like so you either got Chippendale's the, you know, hot dancers
right.
or
the
rescue
rangers. That's
what
I thought it was the first
rangers.
Time I heard it. And then the second time I realized they're talking about the chipmunks or the.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Yeah. So they're talking about the rescue rangers, which I love. Then there's another point at which there's the first mention of hacking, which they think is what is that called? Cracking? And they go, it's called hacking. And then
which is a new thing. You're like, ooh, hacking. What?
What's ooh, hacking computers. And then also in the boiler room, there is a everyone's on Gateway computers, which is very 90s. And I think there is a poster for Gateway, which that's a 90s computer brand, you know?
Sure.
And then finally, we get one of the funniest things ever is the scene with Janice where she first comes and she talks about like being in Seattle and Meadows says, oh, your life is so cool. You know, what's it like living in Seattle? And then Tony goes, you know, if I ever catch you in those grunge pants. And then Meadows says, how do you stay so hip? And says it sarcastically and ironically. And to me, and I don't know if this will continue in this, you know, viewing of the show, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like the beginning of the end of It's the 90s. It's like the first time they're realizing that times are changing, you know, and that like,
I mean, that's so dated. I don't even really know what grunge pants are. Are they just like ripped jeans?
Ripped jeans, yeah. Those were grunge pants.
Yeah.
I wore grunge pants in the 90s, dude, as like a fucking fifth grader. I was a grunge pants kid.
And now we're more into like, hey, we don't wear grunge pants anymore. Now we wear JNCO pants that are wider than our shoes at the bottom.
Yeah, I know. Now you can fit a whole skateboard in your shorts. Yeah, but like it is interesting and it's sad to see it go, but I think eventually It's the 90s is going to be over, but I think we'll wait till September 11th for that to happen.
Yeah,
I think that's the true death of the 90s.
That's the day the 90s died.
Yeah. But Janice's character in the show being introduced like this, just an absolute wrecking ball, just a snake oil salesman and a charlatan. And she's just wonderful because you see the gears working in her head. And they do it in this way that it doesn't feel too obvious. I mean, you know, she's like, you know, vying for something, but you're not sure. And it's not until she takes down the for sale sign on the house that you go, oh, she's trying to steal the house somehow. And it's just beautiful because, you know, she's a total wild card in this whole season.
Well, she's a vagabond and she doesn't like the idea of not having a mother's house to eventually impose upon once one of her schemes goes sideways.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. I mean, it's the safety net. It's like this character that I think would play just as well today as it would back then, which is that, you know, all of your kids are, you know, making less money than you are. And, you know, they kind of count on you, you know, bequeathing them a house in order to survive.
And right. And it's kind of like the entire hippie phenomenon in general. Like the hippie generation doesn't really happen without parents who have, you know, money that they can, you know, you don't go like drive around the country in a van unless, you know, you have some sort of stable family that money to fall back on.
Right, exactly. It's really great. I mean, her character is, for me, one of the most triggering characters in the show. Just like one of the realest depictions of like just an absolute leech that you get on TV. Like, you know, Father Phil said this Yiddish word in last season a couple of times where he was talking about schnorra.
Yeah.
You think I'm a schnorra. And there's no bigger schnorra than Janice. I mean, right. She is, you know, if she smells hot food, she's going to try to eat some of it, you know?
And it's perfect because, you know, Tony's a leech too. He's just leeching off like all the people that he, you know, he extorts money from. Like that's what they've been taught. Yeah. And so Janice is like this.
That's true.
She's this mix of a mob upbringing with like a mother who's like who's toxic and manipulative. And she's like a perfect mix.
Yeah, exactly. It's like they both have the same level of entitlement. Just one uses it to further himself financially in kind of more grandiose ways, both like power and respect. And the other one does it just in the same way kind of a bum does it, you know?
Like, yeah, she's like a new agey extortionist.
Yeah, and she's so beautifully written in terms of her ability to use kind of like liberal catchphrases and like new age phrases in order to emotionally manipulate the person into like believing that she might have a heart, you know, behind all of her schemes as someone who just wants to help, like talking to their sister. You know, she's telling Janice, just leave this alone. Don't worry about the house and all that. And then she's like, hey, I'm not worried, you know, but she has rights, you know, just like she gives a fuck about the rights of her mother. It is just so wonderfully depicted that like that level of manipulation.
Right.
Yeah.
Some questions I had about this episode.
Sure. You
know, Smoke on the Water is playing during Tony's his like little episode where he crashes the car, and I don't know if that was supposed to be like, oh, where there's smoke on the water, like there's a fire, like where there's smoke there's fire, like this is kind of like foreshadowing like a greater mental breakdown. I don't know if that was a thing. Also, this is more just, I don't know if this is a criticism or a plot hole or whatever you want to call it. I didn't really understand why the psychiatrist like let him into the office, let him start talking about his problems. And only after he asked Tony what he does for a living does he reveal like, hey, I know who you are and I don't want to treat you. Like he's taking his money and he knows who he is, but he lets him stay for like half a session anyway.
So maybe he wants to... just out of morbid curiosity is like, I don't want to treat this guy, but I would love to get a meeting with Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
It also could be, and I think this is less likely, that he called up and said, my name is Mr. Spears. And
there's that. But then he showed up and then he could see who the guy was.
Right. And not only that, but also like, you'd really have to watch the news a lot. You'd have to be keeping up with like mob blogs in order to know what Tony Soprano looked like. Like Tony was pretty well insulated.
Mob Law's mob blog.
Yeah, Bob Loblaw's mob blog. you'd have to read Bob Loblaw's mob blog in order to like actually know what Tony Soprano looks like. So, or he could have just, you know, been someone who's racist and was like, oh, this guy's Italian, he's talking about working in waste management, he's probably mobbed up. So yeah, I don't know, it could have been a plot hole. but or it could have just been a way to get a nice analyze this reference.
I think it was like there's a couple moments when there's like one line of dialogue too many and it kind of messes up the flow. I think that's one of them, because obviously we had to get to him, you know, finding out what Tony does and throwing him out. But like the fact that they put all the Tony, his therapy, his actual therapy in there kind of messes with the flow. Same thing with the St. Bernard thing where, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I thought what they were going for there, because I hadn't seen this scene in a while, and I think what I remember from it was not knowing who he was talking to, at first being tricked into thinking he's back in the office with Melfi.
Yeah.
And then kind of the reverse shot of, oh, it's a totally different therapist. So like maybe that's why they played that a little bit
longer. Yeah, they
wanted
that misdirect, yeah.
They wanted a nice little misdirection there. So in terms of, I think it's time for Malapropism Corner.
Right,
yeah. And Malapropism Corner, the only one that I got was when Tony says, oh, now they Dwayne to set foot in our house.
Yeah, I got the clip for that.
My parents are coming.
Oh, really? What, now that the dragon lady's gone, they'll Dwayne to set foot in our house?
She said some horrible...
I like she reacts that the only way you can react is that you just ignore that it happened and keep going.
Yeah, I like to think also that Carmella doesn't know that he said right. Dwayne instead of Dane. Yeah, that is pretty great. In terms of Gaba Vafan Ghoul... there was a few I noticed. One was Skifuz, where at one point he just goes, "You fucking Skifuz." Actually, before I get there, I've noticed something in this show. They love The Godfather, right? Like,
yes.
They talk about it all the time.
Right.
But Syl almost exclusively knows quotes from Godfather 3. And
was that all from Godfather 3 tonight?
Everything except for the where he goes, you know, is it true, Michael? No, you fucking skifoos. But that one's from Godfather 1. But both the just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in. And also, our true enemy has yet to reveal himself. That is also Godfather 3. So it's just weird to me how many quotable lines that Syl knows from Godfather 3 and how, you know, for because they know it's bad. It's like one of the worst movies ever. But yeah, so he calls her a fucking skifooz, which I don't know. Have you done a definition search?
Disgusting, loathsome, lousy, crappy, stinking, filthy, rotten. It's Italian-American slang for skifoso.
Skifoso. Yeah, so a great word that we will use constantly in the show. Another one.
That was one that was in my, like, I knew what that word was before The Sopranos, because I did hear skifoso and,
Oh, look at
in
that.
My family, I think they would say skifioso. I don't know if that's like a northern way to say it. Yeah, who knows? But I
fancy,
heard that one.
Fancy
before.
Northern Italians.
Yeah.
The other one was bukyak, which is a word that they get into later not in this season. I think it's in season 3 or maybe it's this one where Chris is on set doing a movie with Sandra Bernhardt and that other stand-up comic lady whose name I'm forgetting. You know, the one with the like dark hair from the 90s. Everyone loved her.
Janine Garofalo. I don't know.
Janine Garofalo. That's the one. You got it.
Yeah.
And they use the word.
You don't even need to know what it actually means, because bukyak, it just sounds like just on a level of just the
consonants?
Way it sounds. Yeah, yeah. Like it's got those harsh consonants. Like it sounds as harsh as cunt, and so of course it means cunt.
It means cunt, yeah. And in this episode, they just kind of throw it aside. They say bukyak, and I was like, oh, I know that one from this show later on. So that was a good one. Did you catch any Gaba Vafan Ghouls?
I think there was just the one with the basil, where they call it basinagul.
That's just basil?
Yeah, it's like Italian. Yeah, like basilico, basinagul, yeah.
Oh, all right. Well. Yeah. That is an interesting gabava fangul basinigul. You fucking skifus! Sorry. I really like calling people skifus. I'm going to start doing it now.
You should. Yeah.
All in all, I have to say, this episode just gets me so psyched for more episodes of Sopranos in season two. A lot of great characters are going to be introduced. A lot of amazing storylines will be introduced and then come to an abrupt end. No spoilers, but I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, I imagine you've seen the show. What did you think? Like the episode?
Yeah, I mean, it's a setup, good setup episode.
Very good setup episode.
Yeah.
And if you enjoyed this episode of Pod Yourself a Gun, please tell us by going to frotcast@gmail.com and email us. Tell us what you liked. You know, if you noticed that we're wrong about anything, please email us anytime. We love your emails. And Vince, what's the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
Thank you guys so much for listening. I had a great time. Vince, did you have a good time?
I had a great time.
Can't wait for our next episode with an amazing guest. Who knows who it will be? Because it could be anyone. It could be Killer Mike. It could be you. It won't be Killer Mike. It'll probably be you. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. And until next time, don't stop believing. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.